You know those, fascinating fact. You know those.
Here we go. It's going to be awful, isn't it?
You know I've got a grim condom story coming up now, I think.
Everyone ducks.
No.
You know when you lose one.
You know those, do you remember in cereal packets you used to get those little rubber
Spokey
things that you turn inside out and then
they'd spring up? Yeah.
When I was a kid, I used to think that a condom was one of those that basically sat on the end of your dick.
Thanks.
Thanks for that.
I was so very wrong when I discovered condoms.
Another Pod Show podcast. Would you stick it in your ear?
Would you stop saying moin, incidentally?
I wasn't saying moin. What are you talking about?
We're going to talk about moin.
Season 4.
Season 4, episode
16.
Episode 16, yes. We are going to talk about moin, moin.
So
moin,
moin, moin, moin, moin, moin. Who's that? Who's speaking? Is it Matthew P. Ravel?
Hi.
It is Matthew P. Ravel.
Aid P. Bradshaw.
Oh, yeah, he is. Well, we share a P.
John O.P. Baker.
And I'm Stuart P. Language. Welcome to Lug Radio.
We're going to be talking about the Apple TV.
We are going to be talking about the Apple TV.
In shock horror treatment, AIDS actually going to support Apple.
I'm not supporting it.
And anyway,
I'm just tolerating it. Right.
And we're also going to be talking about the PlayStation 3, and in no shock horror treatment at all, John O'Bacon's going to be supporting
it. That's great. All of your charity donations have gone on.
We're also interviewing... Oh, yeah. Ian, as in Ian Murdoch.
Oh, yeah.
Howling Mad Murdoch.
Got any segment? This week, I are mostly Bean.
We are mostly Bean.
Well, we're going to talk about what we've been playing around with recently.
Yep. Two members of the team are going to be, have been, OR mostly Bean.
We've also got an interview with, Mike James Kavner.
James Kavner, who's
an analyst.
He's an analyst, definitely.
He's going to come out with a lot of words that we're going to understand about 20% of them.
Yep.
Because he's an analyst.
Yes, begin.
And begin the penguin.
So, unless you live under a rock, which some of us do. Unless you live under a rock, you'd have probably seen the Apple TV came out recently.
I know someone who lives in an underground house.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Awesome.
Is there a rock on top of it?
Let's take that one offline.
Is he really? Let's park that.
Matt, why are you fucking got a show in your head?
Because he doesn't like your fucking gas. Man. Get over it.
So, right, come on.
Apple TV came out, anyway.
Yes.
I'm not going to go on a big Apple...
Did you rush out and buy it?
Surprisingly enough, I'm not going to go off on a big Apple rant, but... What do we think about it? I mean, it's bringing podcasts and videocasts out of the bedroom into the sort of
Is it not massively locked down?
I guess it is.
What do you mean by locked down?
It doesn't run DivX, and I don't think USB works, even though there are hacks for both of those now, but...
But that's not a thing about the Apple TV, that's Apple, generally.
Oh yeah, absolutely. But has anybody seen it, actually?
I don't understand this distinction. I mean, does that make it okay?
No, not at all. But you're saying, look, the Apple TV's going to go locked down. But we could have, without talking about the Apple TV, because Apple are locked down. They won't play DivX.
The final solution, that's not Hitler, that's the Nazis. I mean, that doesn't make it okay.
So is it going to be the end of TV as we know it?
So your point is the Apple TV, just because it's just the same as Apple, it doesn't make any difference?
And I drag you back to the
conversation. No, I'm just saying the fact that I don't find it that interesting, because it appears as though the device, whoever makes it...
Matt wasn't interested in this
would restrict what I want to do with it. It would be too restrictive for me, I think.
Oh, okay.
That's what I'm saying. I don't give a shit who makes it.
Okay.
Do you think it's the end of the TV as we know it?
No, because, and I'll tell you why.
I think it kind of is, to be honest.
Because there's a hell of a lot of money been put into the infrastructure, and continues to be put into infrastructure for delivering broadcast TV.
Yeah.
So it's not the end of it, just in the way that the DVD,
no,
the VHS...
No, it's the start of that.
Just to clarify, I don't know a lot about the Apple TV thing. You can't pick up regular TV with it, can you?
No,
it's just for watching DVDs and streaming content from your other
from iTunes somewhere else.
So it's a box that you plug into. It's like a set-top box that you plug into your TV to look at digital content, like video and audio.
All the video podcasts that you'd normally watch sat hunched over your TV over your computer, you now watch in the living room with your friends.
All five of them.
Well, okay.
The thing.
I mean, it's like YouTube is what people watch videos on now, isn't it?
No.
I'd say that YouTube has fucking revolutionised the way people watch video on the internet.
I don't think... It's revolutionised...
Not as much as the Apple TV will.
It's revolutionised the way people watch video on the internet. Not the way people watch video. I mean, YouTube's fine if you want to see an amusing picture of a cat falling off of a wall and it's less than 100 meg.
But the point is, you're watching it on your computer, not in your living room.
I've watched
it. Unless your computer is in your living room.
Yeah, but you're not supposed to be able to watch films on YouTube.
Well, yeah.
The thing that disappointed me about it, really, is exactly the same as every other Apple product, is that it's come out and it's really nice. And we can't seem to make stuff that's
that nice.
And the
menu system's really simple. Yeah, connect it together really simply.
I mean, I haven't actually used one. So all I've seen is screenshots.
I don't think it's going to sell particularly well, to
be honest. But you look at it and you think, well, that looks nice and it seems to make sense to me, and in a way that Myth TV, for example, doesn't.
But listen, right, I don't think that's necessarily a problem of, oh, damn, we, the open source community, can't do it. I think it's a problem of Apple can do it. And not many other people, whoever they are.
Oh, yeah,
can do
the thing
it.
Is,
absolutely.
I mean, look at Myth TV. I mean, it's essentially Myth TV, isn't it? But not quite as good in some ways, as far as functionality goes.
Yeah.
But they've just put a much better user interface on it. And we've had Myth TV for ages, and the Apple TV has just happened overnight.
I mean, they've got Jonathan Ive, and we haven't. It's
exactly.
Conceivably what it boils down
exactly.
to.
What, does he design interfaces or something?
Yeah.
No, he just designs stuff.
Yeah, but people have been bringing out PVRs successfully.
But you've still got to implement it, haven't you?
People have been bringing out PVRs. Like, you can go out and you can go to Curry's or Dixon's or whatever and buy a PVR box and plug it in, and it just works. And it'll work.
Yep.
Broadly the same as the Apple TV thing. The difference with Apple TV is because it's Apple, and they're
and you can watch podcasts.
No, they're
and
a so-called lifestyle brand that people like to associate with.
No,
and
it's not PVR though.
No, but the difference
it's
is.
I know. But my point is that they've created something broadly equivalent to Myth TV, obviously without the TV aspects of it. And they've put it in a box, and they've been able to do it. But other people have been able to do it. I'd like to disagree with something Aid said earlier. This is a weird change of. Opinions. You said to me that you think that Apple TV is going to have more of an impact than YouTube has had.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah. I don't believe for a second.
Absolutely.
I think YouTube, although at the moment you can only have like 10-minute long videos, that's how people are watching video on the internet. A lot more people are watching
video
on the internet.
The reason it's going to make a difference,
like,
is something I've said a couple of times already, is because it's taking the content that you usually watch, but you're not watching it on your computer. And that opens it up for a whole load more people.
I think, and that's really important.
That's why your Myth TV rocks, because it sits in your bed, in your main.
That's the reason why I bought a PlayStation 3, because I don't want to play games on my computer. I want to sit in front of my big
wide screen.
We should
talk about
telly.
PlayStation 3
later.
We'll
talk about that in a bit, shall we?
Yeah.
But I. Yeah.
Go on.
All right. All I was going to say.
Pass me a Tic Tacs around.
All I was going to say
Matt,
was.
Are you shaking your Tic Tacs?
I am, yeah.
Don't
want to
shake your Tic Tacs, you're in a shirt wearing.
Just because I'm a single man doesn't mean you could come on to me.
Does he want a Tic Tac?
Oh, yeah, thanks. Anyway, getting back
But back to Apple TV, right? I don't think that makes you exclusive, Apple TV and YouTube. I think that things like that will work together, and you'll end up with
absolutely. I mean,
it's complementing
RSS feeds in it, you know. So you watch,
right,
yeah.
So you'll end up it'll end up complementing the range of living room based entertainment that you have. But I don't see it as replacing broadcast TV or anything like that, because there's just too much investment in the infrastructure.
And
I don't say it's going to replace it. I'm saying it's the start of it's basically TV 2.0, if you like.
You haven't got a TV.
No, and the point
would this interest you?
If it wasn't Apple,
imagine it was made by.
Well, then, would you plug it into?
Flat screen.
Yeah.
He hasn't got a TV.
Flat screen monitor.
A flat screen.
You got a
great big plasma screen.
You haven't got a television. You go out and buy a television just to have one of these.
Don't know.
Interestingly, why are you interested in Apple TV when Myth TV's existed for ages and it's open source?
Myth TV has a television. I don't want television.
No, you just don't use. Well, what about Freevo? Or what?
You don't have to use the television bits of it.
Yes, but you have to have a fucking license for a TV, don't you?
No, you just know.
But you'd have to have a license for the Apple TV.
No, you don't, because it doesn't receive TV signals.
Well, yeah, but there's no way. If you just had a machine running
Myth
TV or Freevo,
no, he hasn't.
And you plug it into a flat screen monitor, then you don't have to receive anything.
Yeah. You only have to have a license if you are receiving.
If you're receiving broadcast television.
And I know this very well now, because we recently got rid of all the TVs in our house. And you have to not have a television in your house, let alone turned on.
But you wouldn't have a TV. What are you going to plug the Apple TV into?
Into the flat screen.
But then you can do that with Myth TV.
Right.
You can do exactly the same thing with Myth TV.
But Myth TV is going to have TV cards in it.
No,
it doesn't. You just
Myth TV
is
just software.
Oh, okay, right.
You just buy some hardware without a TV card in.
Right.
And run Myth TV on it and plug it into a flat screen monitor.
And then you have all of your videos on there. You have all of your music on there.
Does it
do it? You can browse
on
it. Yeah, check it out. It was one in my living room.
I've never seen you watch a video podcast on it. And I've never seen you watch any podcast on
that's
it.
That's because I never watch video podcasts.
Oh, I've never seen you listen to an audio podcast.
Can you actually do podcasting? I mean,
I just asked that question.
No, you'll be able to put audio podcasts on it and video podcasts on it. I mean, the advantage that the thing the Apple TV's got is it itself doesn't do very much. You can't do that with the Apple TV either. You have to do it with your computer, which has got iTunes on it.
You have to link it to
which
it.
Which is shit.
Yes, and that's what you expect from
so
a proprietary system.
So your question, can Myth TV do it? Apple TV can't do it either. You have to get them on your actual computer somewhere else on your network.
But ultimately, it does it.
And MythTV, because it's open source, you could write a plugin to do it.
Tell you what, the Slimpy 3 squeeze box thing, that's pretty cool.
What did you just say?
Anyway, that's
Slimpy 3 squeeze box. Is that some kind of instrument?
And there's a thing called a sling box as well, but I don't
know. Sling box takes content from your satellite TV, sends it to your computer, and then fucking lets you watch it on your phone.
Anyway, enough positive really? Stuff about what Apple
bullshit?
For me.
Hey, this has been ridiculous.
I want another Tic Tac. Let's wind it up.
I'm impressed.
That Murdoch bloke who did Debian, right?
Howling Mad?
No.
He knew you were going to say that.
And not Rupert either.
He fell off a yacht, didn't he?
No, he didn't. No,
Robert Maxwell.
Right, anyway, right.
When Howling will you learn?
Right, Howling Mad. Fucking. You've got me doing it now, Ian Murdoch. Right.
Hasn't he got a large news consortium?
No. No, Rupert. He's now working for Sun. We should ring him.
We should.
Do you know his number?
I do actually have his number. It's an interesting number.
Dial it, boy.
Give it a dial.
Hello?
Hi, Ian. It's Lug Radio calling.
Hi, Ian. Hi there. How are you?
Not so bad. How's things?
Going well.
Good, good. So you're starting work at Sun, or have you started work at Sun yet?
Yeah, I started a couple of weeks ago, so I guess I'm in day 14.
Fantastic. Now fill us in on what you're doing there.
I'm sorry?
Give us some details about what you do at Sun.
Well, so, you know, my mandate is fairly loosely defined at this point. The main thing that I am doing is to make Solaris more attractive to the Linux crowd, I suppose, is the simplest way to put it. So, you know, looking back in my own history, and you saw this if you saw the announcement, when I was at university, Sun was it, right? And so everybody wanted a Sun workstation, and everybody knew Sun inside and out. And at some point along the way, Linux became the it thing. And so starting late 90s, early part of this decade, people were going through universities and learning more and more Linux and less Sun, right? So the real question now is how does Sun get that developer mindshare back for Solaris in particular? And then how, of course, does that developer mindshare impact Sun's business, which, you know, at the end of the day is the important thing.
Ian, what excites you about Solaris?
Well, so Solaris has some really, really fantastic technology. So it all came back on my radar a couple of years ago, of course, when they open sourced it. And right. Yeah. Started reading about D-Trace and more recently ZFS and, you know, SMF. I mean, there's a whole lot of really interesting and exciting and innovative things happening in Solaris. And as a Linux user or someone who has been primarily a Linux user for the past 10 or 15 years, you know, I went to download Open Solaris and went to install it, you know, genuinely interested to see what Solaris had to offer. And the first thing I was confronted with was an installation that seemed reminiscent of what Linux had, you know, 10 years ago.
Right.
And logged in at the shell and you know, typed a few things and hit the wrong key and hit backspace and there's caret H.
Right,
you know,
right.
The kind of thing that used to plague Linux a long time ago, but, you know, Linux has long since moved past that. So I think the real exciting thing here is that the underlying technology behind Solaris is really, really good. The main challenge is how to fix some of these problems, which I sort of collectively refer to as the usability gap, right? Some of these things like installation and packaging and just basic things like the shell environment, right?
Yeah.
And you know, there's so that, you know, that's the main thing is there's some real opportunity and a lot of interesting work to be done.
So do you see, I suppose, a role for, you mentioned packaging. I mean, are we going to get the Fantastic Act on Solaris, or is it more complicated than that?
Well, yeah, since it's what, day 14, I think it's hard for me to definitively say exactly what I'm going to do or what's going to be done. It is one of the top areas, you know, when I ask what should we be doing, that's one of the top answers that I get. So I think it's safe to say that packaging is going to be a big focus. What exactly that means, I'm not sure. I mean, I'm stepping into an environment where there's clearly a long history and a lot of other things going on. There are other complicating factors. Solaris has a very strong backward compatibility guarantee, for example, right? So it's not as simple as, say, you know, taking a Linux distribution and ripping the Linux kernel out and putting Solaris in. Right, which is what some people seem to think this reduces to. So it is a complex question, but it is certainly one that's going to be addressed.
Cool. A question which is perhaps going to sound a bit mean, but it's not intended to.
I never get questions like that.
I suspected you might do. I mean, and I imagine it's a question you've had before. Debian, things you've done in the past, Debian obviously enormously successful, so on and so forth. But Progeny, for example, wasn't perhaps as successful as you might have hoped it was. So why do you think Sun have come to you to do the job that you're doing?
You know, so anytime, well, first of all, I'll agree with you. Progeny did not achieve the level of success that I hoped it would. You know, like anybody who tries to do big things, you don't always succeed. And you know, Progeny is in that sense just another one of those things. You know, it really depends on your success metric, though. So yeah, you know, Progeny didn't have a $200 acquisition or $200 million acquisition. $200 maybe still in the cards, but
I'll give you $199.99.
You know, there was no IPO, and I mean none of the typical sort of success metrics that you'd apply to a startup. But you know, it has employed dozens of people for, you know, 7 years now. It's paid millions of dollars of salaries, which have gone to pay taxes, right? So, I mean, in some sense, it has been a success.
Ah, cool.
And, you know, if you want to talk about things that I've done that have not been successful, I think you can find better examples than Progeny. Right? You know, do you remember the Linux Core Consortium? You know, there are other examples, but it's not mean at all. I think that it's certainly, whenever you try to do something interesting, you open yourself up to the possibility of failing at it. But the alternative is not to try anything at all.
Exactly.
You know, I don't have a whole lot of respect for those kinds of people.
Now, you know, going back to Debian again, obviously Debian, you know, as Zach says, has been hugely successful. And we all love Debian to bits, but in recent years there's been, it seems to have struggled, there's been some issues and some infighting that's happening. What are your thoughts on Debian today as compared to Debian when you were largely involved with it?
Well, you know, so I got myself in a little bit of trouble answering this question a couple of months ago, and which was unfortunately, the interview was unfortunately released on the same day that my hiring at Sun was announced, so of course the conspiracy theorists came out of the woodwork, and that was fun. But you know, my main problem with Debian right now is it is the lack of any sort of predictability in terms of what it's doing or when it's going to do it. And really, what Debian is doing is it's building a platform, and it's building a platform in more ways than an operating system vendor typically builds a platform, which is for application developers, right? So every operating system is a platform that, that application developers can build on. Debian goes beyond that. Of course, there are operating system developers building on it too, right? So whenever you're a platform, your roadmap, your timeline, I mean, these sorts of things are incredibly important. Right? You can't build your own product on something else if you don't know when that product is going to be released.
Yeah.
People right? have. So I think that's part of the reason that you see, frankly, Debian's popularity waning a little bit in recent years. I think that there was a window of opportunity for Debian to fix some of these problems. And frankly, it's why Ubuntu happened, because Debian was seemingly unable to solve the problems for itself. And I think Ubuntu gave Debian a much-needed kick in the pants to get its act together. And, you know, here it is March, and Etch hasn't been released yet. You know, so it's really hard to hard to know. I mean, my main concern about Debian is, you know, obviously Debian is dealing with issues that no project in the history of software has ever had to deal with. And that just goes along with blazing a new trail and, you know, scaling. Right? How do you scale a project to this size without any significant financial backing? And so obviously there's going to be some bumps along the way. My fear is that the pendulum has swung too far in the direction of having structure and process, right? To the point where that structure and process takes on a life of its own, right? And this was the meat of that interview I did a few weeks ago. In the end, people don't feel empowered to make decisions, or more importantly, to make unpopular decisions, and those are the kinds of decisions that leaders have to make, right? Like, yes, we are going to release Etch at this, you know, at this date, whatever it looks like, right? Anyway, I could go on for hours about this.
I can imagine. I mean, you've talked a bit about Solaris having a usability gap, and you get to fight through the problems that Linux fought through 5, 10 years ago, whatever. And obviously, one of the things you're doing is trying to fix that. But is a lot of what you're doing, at least initially, do you think, going to be trying to catch up to where Linux is, or are you going in a different direction entirely?
Well, so yeah, that's a good question. I think in some ways there is some catching up to be done, primarily from a usability perspective. Now, as I said earlier, I think Solaris is out front in other areas, like you know, some of these deep kernel innovations like dtrace and ZFS.
Yeah.
So I think in a lot of respects, it's primarily a packaging and presentation issue. And in those same respects, Solaris is actually in a better position than Linux was 5 or 10 years ago, because there's an existing base of code to borrow from and build on. And certainly, you know, the goal here, let me just be as blunt about it as I can be, the goal here is not to turn Solaris into Linux.
Yep.
The goal is to make Solaris more familiar to people who already know Linux. Right? There's an important distinction.
Okay,
good call. Speaking as a Linux user currently, if you had 30 seconds, what would you do to convince me to use Solaris? Or is your answer, go away and come back in 12 months?
Yeah, I mean, I think at this point I would give it a try, take a look. But understand that, you know, just like you had to do with Linux 10 years ago, you have to get to a certain level of you know, involvement in the project to understand how things work. And if that's not something you're comfortable doing, then do go away and come back and have a look.
Cool.
Excellent. Thank you very much for talking to us,
Thank
Ian.
You.
Best of luck
you're
with
welcome.
The job.
Thanks, Howlin.
And let us know how you get on.
Okay.
Cheers.
Thanks, Ian.
Okay,
bye.
Thanks a
lot. Bye.
Bye.
This week, I'll be mostly
playing with OpenVZ.
You are Tess Oxford.
OpenVZ.
What's OpenVZ?
Is that like some
that
kind
like
of
BZ flag?
BZ flag.
No.
No, it's an OpenVZ flag. BZ, as opposed to closed BZ flag.
It's nothing to do with any of that.
Are people still playing BZ flag? Pile of wang, isn't it?
I think your mum does.
my mum's lead on BZ flag.
She is. So OpenVZ.
She's in the clan.
It's virtualization.
Right.
Different kind of virtualization. It's not really like VMware.
It's a virtualization for tanks.
Imagine being able to
nothing
have
to do with tanks.
Imagine you could have 200 web servers running on one machine.
Right. They'd be running at 200th.
No, they would. Not if they all ran with the same kernel.
Surely if 200 people connect to your machine...
No, hang on,
that's
right. Try not to take the piss just yet. There is a moment. Give us the 30-second thumbnail sketch of what it is first.
Okay.
Elevator pitch.
I'm not going to go into all the hypervisor and all the rest of that kind
hypervisor.
Of stuff.
Hypervisor.
Three different ways you can virtualize.
Is that all like a super gambler does?
Whatever.
We were not going to take the piss, remember? Sorry, I can't.
I didn't
say
agree
again.
To that.
Hypervisor. What all?
Is that a new Linspire problem?
It is.
So, anyway, it's not an emulator. It's not a hypervisor. Because these are three different virtualization technologies. And neither of those two.
Is it a bird?
Essentially.
Or a plane?
All of your virtual environments.
Okay.
All of your virtual environments run from the same kernel, but they're individual machines to themselves.
Oh,
they only have the kernel in common.
Right.
So you can chop your machine up into however many machines that you want, all with different IP addresses. You can install different packages into each one. I saw this at FOSDEM at one of the CentOS talks. And the guy had literally 200 machines all turned off, and he ran a little script to turn them all on, and it was awesome. So since I've got back, I've been playing around with it, and I found it's really good for some things.
So is it a lot more efficient to have a number of machines running from one kernel?
A heck of a lot more efficient.
Right. Please, sir, I have a question. I don't understand why, if you've got one kernel and you've got the same amount of memory in a machine, why it's more efficient to run 200 different virtual machines, each within an Apache, than it is just run 200 copies of Apache inside one machine.
It's not more efficient. It's just the fact that you can separate out each of the machines. So it's kind of like UML, you know, if you're running a hosting environment, you can give everybody their own little machine.
Right, so if in order to set up a machine where I could run 200 different virtual machines on it, I'd have to have a machine which was capable of running Apache 200 times and not blowing up.
No, I don't think so.
Well, this is the point of the question. How does it work then? How the hell can you run 200 Apaches in separate virtual environments but not run 200 Apaches in one virtual environment?
It's the same load, basically.
It's not the TARDIS.
It does feel like it sometimes when you actually list how many machines you've got running there. You've got
but how slowly are they running?
They're running at full tilt. Honestly, you don't notice any slowdown on them.
How?
I promise you.
How in God's name?
Obviously, I don't have 200 web servers that are all being hit at the same time with dig.com being redirected to me.
Stop talking shit.
Whatever, I've run it.
So is the aim of this mainly for separating out these instances of Apache?
So it depends what you want to run. You don't have to run Apache in them all. You know,
using Apache as an example.
Right.
It could be Light HTTP.
You can have one server. Well, exactly. I mean, yeah, definitely. That would be the sort of thing that they're
using. Using what, sorry?
Byte mark.
Yeah.
Right.
It's sort of thing. I mean, if you look at...
we love byte mark.
If you look at John O and I's shared machine, which is actually a real machine now, not a VM.
Right, wow.
Slayer.
Yeah, Slayer.
It's cool. Good because he likes Buffy the Vampire Slayer and I like... Slayer.
You like metal.
The metal,
It fits into both our naming schemes.
We argued for ages.
Very nice.
We did. I must confess, Mr. Bacon, I said, it's got to be called after a Buffy character, and he went, we'll call it Slayer then. And I thought, well, all right, we can go for that. I don't know what we're going to call the next machine, but anyway.
We're going to call it Decapitated.
No, we're not.
Megadeth.
We're going to call it Jonathan. I could split it into... The machine that runs johnobacon.org and the machine that runs cryogenics.org.
Yeah, and they're completely
separate. And the machine that runs lugradio.org completely separately.
Yeah.
Which will stop Jono fucking up our MySQL installation.
You are one to talk about.
If you want to run lots of different versions of something, like say you've got WordPress and you've got lots of different versions of it, you can run all of those on the same machine.
So is it like...
segregating out...
So for example, so if we had... Using that as the example of johnobacon.org and cryogenics.org, we'd have our own root account.
You'd have your own root account.
I can see what you mean.
Yeah, SSH into that account.
So it feels like two separate machines, but they're running from the same.
They're entirely different. You never get to see the ordinary directory.
Does it work on anything? Does it need magic hardware support from the CPU?
No.
Because there's
you need a special kernel, but that's it.
But there's this virtualization thing in the kernel, in the CPUs, isn't it? It's not power virtualization.
No, it's not using that.
No.
What the fuck is a hypervisor?
I'm not getting into that. This is a short segment.
Just give me a one sentence description of what a hypervisor is.
You can read into this the fact that I don't know myself as well.
Okay, fair enough. I hear people talk about hypervisors and I feel like I should know, but
okay,
I don't.
It's all on Wikipedia.
JFGI.
Yes, just fucking Google it.
So, this is what I've been messing about with for the last few weeks.
Open PZ. So, would you recommend it?
I think it's...
To people to play with?
For me, it's been really good for some things, and not so good for others. When you create, like, a VM environment, what I like about it is you can limit the amount of CPU and the amount of memory that each one uses. So, if you, for instance, were to open... If you want Folded at Home to run, right, you could set up a little VZ for it, but you could say, only ever use 10% of my processor.
Right, okay.
Even though it's only using, like,
so you can nice
idle. But, yeah, so you can take that machine so you can and nice you can nice the whole machine.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. Is it anything, like, stable? Would you run...
It's utterly stable.
You'd run real things on it?
I would. I found some difficulty installing things like Xenos or Zimbra or something really sort of big like that, but I've had a lot of success running other things like WordPress and stuff
would,
like
would
that.
You use it in preference to VMware?
Can
you run X in more than one of the VMs?
The answer to that is I'm running both.
Are you running VMware inside an OpenVZ machine?
No.
So OpenVZ would all have to be the same OS, wouldn't it?
Not necessarily. Maybe they have to run the same kernel, but they don't have to be the same OS.
So one of them can't be Windows.
So you can have Fedora, can have CentOS, you can have Ubuntu.
Yeah, you have all different flavours of red.
Because Ubuntu has a different kernel to...
No, but you can. There are different templates. You download different templates.
Really?
Yeah. So someone's put together a kernel on which Fedora will run and Ubuntu will run. You install that
kernel.
It's
so good to provision them. It literally takes, you just type in this command to provision a new machine, wait about 20 seconds, and it's there.
Two very brief questions. And do you get nice graphical tools to manage it, or is it all command line stuff?
At the moment, all command line, but I should imagine those tools are on their way.
And can you run X in OpenVZ instances?
Can you run X
in more than one of them?
Haven't actually tried it. I mean, the machine that I'm running on is earmarked as my VM machine, and it just doesn't have X on it at all.
And is it open VZ or open BZ?
V.
V for Vertigo.
Who's behind it and how they're making the money?
Don't know, but I heard about it at the CentOS talk, so I should imagine it's something to do with that.
Fantastic. Well, that's what A's been playing with.
Ooh.
So, recently I bought a PS3.
Because you hate freedom.
And you got too much money.
Shouldn't that be Captain Predictable strikes again.
Shouldn't that be a PPPS?
Yeah, no...
A what?
Nothing.
What the fuck? I completely agree with you. You are Captain Predictable. Immediately a new Sony product comes out, you go and buy it.
Because I've got so many Sony products, haven't I?
Every fucking PlayStation's ever come out.
This one is different because this time he bought it.
Oh, yeah, good point. Absolutely.
Incidentally, haven't you got a Sony PlayStation as well?
No, my daughter's got a Sony PlayStation.
Yeah, in your house, right? Yeah. Which she plays on. Where did you get that from?
Where did she earn that money?
Yes, thank you. And you gladly accepted it and fucking complained then, did you?
No, because Neve wanted it.
So it's all right for your daughter to hate freedom, but not for you.
No, it's not particularly all right for my daughter to hate freedom, but I have discovered that trying to explain the intricacies of the GPL doesn't go down all that well with a six-year-old.
Maybe that's where you're going wrong.
I mean, if you have no more technical judgment than that of a six-year-old, then just speak on.
Pretty much no more technical judgment than a six-year-old.
So anyway, you bought PS3 and the graphics are very nice.
We've just been playing on it. PS3, I mean, I don't particularly like Sony. I like PlayStation, but I don't particularly like Sony, particularly as they bring out a new fucking media format every 6 months. Blu-ray, waste of time. But yeah, there's a few things about it which have intrigued me, which I thought we could talk about, right?
Okay.
First thing, which I think is interesting, is that you can get Folding at Home on it. It comes with
it. That's awesome, and it runs automatically.
Yeah.
It's just running all the time in the background.
So it basically...
On how many of the cores?
It runs... Apparently the PlayStation...
How many fucking chips has it got?
Apparently the PlayStation's got 8 cores. It's got one that controls...
That doesn't mean 8 chips, though.
It's basically got a power PC that controls 7 other cores or something like that, isn't it?
Wow. It's fucking ridiculously powerful. Yeah. Apparently...
Like the Intel dual-core processor, it's got 8.
Apparently.
Yeah.
Wow. Cool.
Yeah. 8 cores.
Okay, that's quite cool.
Apparently, you know the PlayStation... in the phone. You know the PlayStation 2 is a pretty powerful games console. Apparently, it's 25 times faster than that. Ridiculous.
Not bad.
It's an insanely powerful machine.
So, Folding at Home comes with it, and it's running already, and already it's kind of at the top of the...
Now, should we tell people what folding at home is?
Yeah, folding at home is a thing where you download like a chunk of information and of like biological information, I believe, and then your machine basically processes that information and submits it back to the.
It's trying to work out how proteins fold by basically trying all the combinations.
And it's to do and it helps towards
cancer
solving.
Research.
Is it cancer and I think Parkinson's disease and a few other.
Folding proteins is for it's how you loads of things. Yeah. If you understand how proteins fold,
it's a valuable
project. Why they fold in that way, it is a valuable project.
But yeah, there's it actually comes. It comes with like it doesn't come with folding at home the actual full program. Bizarrely, it comes with a link where you can install it.
Oh, right. Okay.
So you click on that and then it downloads it and it starts running. But there's a thing on there saying folding at home and it explains what it
I
is.
I think there'd probably be some kind of conspiracy theory if it was installed by default and running.
Hang on, Ficky's question there. You just said, it's at the top of the leaderboard. Does that mean they've built the PlayStation 3 team with all PlayStation 3s in it?
As far as
kick everyone's off, that's really unfair.
When I checked, and I might be wrong here, but you start running it and
fair.
it starts processing away and it's fucking quick processing stuff because it's so powerful. And I checked the stats and apparently the PS3 is like leading the way. I might be wrong, but that's what I saw.
But it's all one PS3 team. So if you were the
it's all PS3. It's like the highest platform. It's like the platform.
Oh right. Sorry, I was thinking. You know, if you were the highest team and you try really hard to get that position, then suddenly 800,000 PS3s will come on the market in one team.
It's good as well.
Kudos to Sony for doing that.
Yeah, well done.
I mean, that's a really worthwhile thing to do.
It is. And apparently, like I say, apparently it kicks in when your machine's idle. Although I've not seen this actually happen because machines very rarely been idle. But apparently it does kick in. I mean, what a great use of all that processing power.
Yeah.
And so many people are going to have PS3s plunked under their TVs.
Totally agree with you.
So I was quite impressed with that.
What do you do, Microsoft, with your fucking idle?
Do you know, I heard something, and apparently this is secret information.
So how many people here run Folding at Home, by the way? Not on their PlayStation.
I used to run it.
I used to run it, and I turned it off.
Ah, well then. Yeah.
Yeah, I know. It's not very well done.
I'd much rather run that than SETI at home.
Right.
Okay. Apparently,
Folding at Home's got a genuine point. Said you just think, shut up, man. I don't even care.
So you two, because I run it already.
Such a narrow.
You already run it.
Yeah.
Cool.
So you two need to go home and install it.
Okay. I mean,
you get it for Linux.
The reason I uninstalled it is because it didn't seem to detect idleness very much. In that, it seemed to slow down my machine even when I wasn't using it. I don't know whether it was perception or not.
You've got a shit machine.
Well, yeah, possibly so.
2 megabytes of RAM.
But, well, I did have then. I haven't had it since I got the new laptop.
But apparently my last work unit was like September 2004 before I switched my PS3 on with it. The other thing which I thought was interesting, you know, for us to talk about is, have you seen PlayStation Home?
I've heard about it.
No.
No, what's that?
It's basically Second Life running on the PlayStation 3. Like,
Is it actually Second Life?
But it's the same
their
concept.
Own version. Yeah.
So, in typical Sony form, you know, they can't possibly strike a deal with Linden Labs, so they've got their own fucking equivalent. It looks stunning, and it's broadly the same sort of stuff. You can have your own house, you can buy objects and put stuff in there.
Right.
But it's not a simulation of it just on your local thing. You connect to an internet.
Yeah, you connect to, you connect. I mean, the nice thing about PS3 is it's very connectable, you know, so like it's got wireless on there and it's got built-in Ethernet and it's got Bluetooth. Bluetooth is brilliant, you know, and it's
nice to see controllers without cables.
And I stood in my...
Is the cable... I noticed that the controller's wireless. Is it Bluetooth?
Yes.
Cool.
And the remote control for the DVD player's Bluetooth as well.
Thank God for that.
Could have been infrared.
Thank God someone has started coming up with remote controls that are Bluetooth powered and not really infrared, because I started looking for one and couldn't find one.
But it's, I was thinking, I mean, to me this PlayStation Home thing seems very exciting, and I like the idea, because the thing is, I like playing games on my PlayStation.
You played Second Life for a while and then gave up.
Yeah, but I like the idea of
Scrum.
I like the idea of playing games in front of my telly. I like to sit down on my couch and play games. I don't like to sit in front of a laptop or
in front of
a computer.
Yeah.
And so the idea of having that plugged in, you know,
and
the your PlayStation plugged into
it's
that.
It's a media centre as well, you can put all your tunes
exactly.
on it.
Exactly.
The problem I've got, though...
Can you put videos on it?
Yep.
Do they have been some magic Sony format?
No, MPEG-4.
The problem I've got is...
So, just a patented Apple format.
John is, at the moment...
that's not fair. It's not...
Re-encoding all his porn.
It's not patented Apple format.
It's a patented format, and it's the format Apple uses.
Right.
Not patented by Apple. So, I mean, this is something of a sore point for me at the moment. You remember we talked... I'll digress slightly here. Do you remember we talked a little while ago, when Christian Schaller was on the show, about a video element in web browsers?
Mm-hmm.
And it would be really good, and everyone could support a baseline format of hopefully Ogg Theora. And there's been a big discussion about this on the WG mailing list, where basically the Apple people have said, we're not supporting Ogg Theora. We're just not going to. It's going to be H.264 if we do it.
And that surprises you?
And then, well, not really. It doesn't surprise me, but it's quite disappointing. Because they're saying, well, you know, we just need to see which codec wins out in the marketplace. And Jerv, among other people from the Mozilla Foundation, well, possibly the Mozilla Corporation, I don't really understand it, has been saying, but if you make it MPEG-4, Firefox is just not going to support it because it's free software.
Exactly, yeah.
And so what's going to happen is we're either not going to do it at all, or we're going to get a video tag, and then which codec you support is up to the browser manufacturers. Yeah. Well, so which is exactly the same as we got at the moment.
Can't we just fuck off fucking Apple? I mean, they've got a tiny percentage of people using Safari anyway. Sod them.
I should have turned my phone off, shouldn't I?
Well, possibly you could do, but if Apple aren't going to buy into it, Microsoft aren't either, I imagine.
His phone?
Surely Microsoft would want to, wouldn't just stick to what Apple buy into Apple then doing.
Well, no, but if all you've got is Firefox doing it,
yeah, then
are Microsoft going to say, well, yeah, we'll buy into the Ogg Theodore, or they're going to say, no, we want WMV.
Yep.
In the same way Apple have said, we want H.264. And the fact that Firefox can't play is not our fucking problem. Let's see what wins in the market.
I tell you what, I mean...
Anyway, sorry, a complete digression is just... annoyed me a bit, and I'm just disappointed, really.
I tell you what annoyed me as well. I fucking trapped my finger in the drawer earlier on. Sorry, slight digression. That just annoyed me a bit.
Shut up. Talk about the PS3.
The thing is, one thing that does annoy me, particularly about Sony, like I say, I mean, I don't like Sony as a company. I begrudge buying a product from them, and I generally don't buy any Sony products from them. You know,
apart from their most expensive games console.
But yeah. I mean, I'm not going to buy an Xbox, and
they're not from Sony.
I'm not going to buy an Xbox.
What do you see as the difference, by the way, between buying an Xbox from Microsoft and buying a PlayStation
reason
from
is
Sony?
I have more of an objection against Microsoft than Sony.
Really?
So in terms of voting with my feet, yeah.
Okay.
I don't like Sony, but they're a hardware vendor. I don't really care about hardware, whereas Microsoft are our direct competitor with the Linux world.
Right.
So that's one aspect.
You don't find that Sony hardware is problematic for the Linux community too?
I think it is, but I don't. I think they're both shit, but it's less shit. And the thing is, the reason why I've always used PlayStations as opposed to other games consoles, and I think the Wii is a novelty. I think
the Wii is ridiculous.
The Wii isn't a novelty.
The Wii's great, but I think it's a novelty, and it's good for people it's good for certain types of games players, like people who like playing with like the iToy and things like that. Are the kind of people who will buy a Wii.
It's been hugely dismissive. It's been a massive success.
I'm not saying it isn't a success. It's
revolutionary
just not,
controller as well.
I'm not saying
nobody's ever come out of this.
I just personally, I think it's a novelty, and for me, it's novelty. I think other people will enjoy it, and it's been very successful.
The thing that I think is interesting about it, digressing again slightly here, but the PS3 is a better version of existing consoles. It's going to be bought by roughly the same people who already own a PS2 or a PS1 or possibly an Xbox. The Wii, the reason I think the Wii is interesting is because I think a lot of people who wouldn't have bought a games console...
Definitely.
Wouldn't have ever dreamed of having a PS2 because it's all about bloody racing games and beat-em-up games and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Would be interested in a
PS3.
Wii. Anyway, getting back to the PS3, which is...
Does it run Linux?
It does.
Does it?
It does.
No, is it capable of it?
No, it does. Oh, as in, does it itself run Linux out of the box?
Yeah. I thought Sarah Ewan said that a lot of...
Can it was going to come with Linux on it. That's what Sarah Ewan told us.
There was a load of bullshit came out from Sony about, well, they said we're considering pre-installing Linux on the hard drives that come with it, right?
So the stock PlayStation operating system, whatever the hell it's called, isn't Linux.
No.
But they were talking about having the stock PlayStation operating system and Linux installed on the hard drive, so you could boot it into Linux.
As far as I'm aware, that's what they were saying. Now, this was ages ago. What it allows you to run Linux on there, like, there's an option saying install other operating system, then you basically plonk an ISO, a disk, and install
this,
and then it just installs.
Does it have to be... Yep. A magic ISO for the PlayStation. Yeah,
well, it's got to be a build for that architecture.
Well, the reason I ask is that, as I understand it, you couldn't take any arbitrary Linux you liked and run it on the PlayStation 2. It had to be the special Sony one.
It's completely new hardware.
No, it's not just because of the hardware. There were certain lockdown bits of it that couldn't be open source.
Axe, right.
Is that the same thing with the PlayStation 3? Ubuntu couldn't release a Linux
The problem was that with the PS2 you had to buy the Linux kit.
Yeah.
And that came with the software and the hardware.
As I understand it, there were some closed source components in it.
Now with the PS3, everything's built into the machine in terms of hardware. So you can just you can install Fedora, or you can install Ubuntu on there, you can install Gentoo on there or whatever.
You point at me when you said Gentoo?
So anyone
could build a Linux distribution for it.
Yes,
and have they? So you say they have already?
Yeah, people are building distros for it.
Cool.
I mean, and it's the thing that I've heard though is that apparently there's some kind of built-in security from people accessing some of the hardware on the machine, like the
But you can fire up Firefox and surf the internet.
Yeah, I mean, I saw at LCA there was some guys running Ubuntu on the PS3.
Cool. And it wasn't even out then, was it?
It was out, and it's been out in like America and Japan for months.
Really?
Oh, right. Yeah, okay. We always get the shit.
And there are like USB ports on it, so I take it you can plug keyboards and stuff like that.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty cool. And if you lift the thing up, there's like an SD card reader I think there's compact flash and memory card.
I hope there's a bloody memory stick reader.
I'm surprised there's not
a
memory just stick memory stick in there.
I was going to say. Yeah. It's an improvement that's not just memory stick. I was hoping they'd sacked off memory sticks and said, just go and buy a bloody SD card like everyone else.
Yeah, I mean,
that's how to reward their customers, isn't it?
if you look away from that, I mean, I think, in my mind, I mean, like going back to the discussion about Wii's, I mean, for me personally, I like sitting down on a couch and playing a game with a joypad, you know. I'm not really into standing up and fucking hitting an invisible fucking tennis ball. If I thought about doing that, I think it would put me off. I think that's why I'd suggest it's the Wii for some people a novelty. For me, it would be a novelty. I think a lot of people enjoy playing it, and they are very cool.
For traditional games players, absolutely.
But I'm more of a traditional games player, and I like playing on PlayStation, so that's why I bought it. And I feel a bit shitty the fact that I've bought a Sony machine, and I don't like the fact that it's got Blu-ray in it and all the rest of it. But it's
better than
MJ,
Ray.
All right.
So, anyway, fucking the wit meister strikes spot. He doesn't listen to the fucking show anyway.
No, he said we jumped the shark.
Did he?
Yeah.
What the fuck does that mean?
I don't know, but
is that on the foot? Fuck the pooch.
Right. So the PS3, excellent. Good one.
Yeah, whatever.
Yep.
Or not.
Depending on your view, really. If you hate freedom, go out and buy one.
Okay, now analysts get coming for a bit of a bad rap in the old open source world. They do, yeah, because everyone thinks they're bastards.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's right. So we've got James Govnar from Red Monk, which is one of the cooler analyst companies.
Okay,
analyzers.
Cool.
So James, hello mate, how you doing?
I'm doing very well. I'm glad that you're insulting my compadres, because Lord knows they deserve it. And certainly, you know, appreciated, being articulated as people that possibly got it a bit, or were cool, or whatever the word you used was.
Even I can't remember.
Suffice to say, it's difficult, because traditional analysts only want to cover things that they get paid to cover.
Yeah.
And I think you'll find that the open source world doesn't really work like that.
Yeah.
So that's been a significant challenge for their, business models, the way they see themselves. And it just kind of amuses me, frankly, that we're still in a world where they're kind of frantically trying to work out how to count market share.
So can we just get the basics out of the way first? What is an analyst? What do IT industry analysts do?
That's a $60,000 question, obviously, and maybe I'm not the right person to ask, because Red Monk we do something slightly differently, and come on, fuck it, you've asked me here to say what we do, so I should probably say industry analysts are of two types traditionally, which is buy side or sell side. So they are a group of people that analyze what vendors do or what the vendors' customers do.
Right.
So either helping people to sell their technology more effectively or helping people to buy their technology more effectively. And on a daily basis, they're going to be doing research that talks to those communities, the buy side or the sell side.
Right.
So they're going to spend a lot of time possibly consulting with the Fortune 500 company or let's try and be a little bit more realistic. Just, they might be consulting with Sainsbury's or Tesco's, right. or Asda or whatever. Or they might be consulting with IBM, Microsoft, and so on. Now, I actually think the distinction is somewhat false, and that's one of the things that Red Monk is predicated on. But if we look at the traditional analyst, it tends to be either or. So they're either as a sort of a consultant, helping users to buy more effectively, involving themselves in requests for proposals, requests for information. Sainsbury's phones them up and says, we are looking to buy a data warehouse, and we want to know who should be on the request for proposal list.
Oh, okay.
We want to know who were the top vendors in that space. Or if they might be the kind of people that IBM would call and say, we want to be more effective in retail, how do we get on Tesco's RFP?
Yeah, I see. And what makes you guys the people to answer those questions?
Yeah, well, I'm not sure that we are the people to answer those questions.
No.
Which question do you ask?
Catch you later then.
Oh, shit, sorry. Was this like radio? I've done it wrong again. So I think one of the things that we've, personally, I must admit, I've got a bit of a chip on my shoulder when people just describe me as self-fired. It's true that the vast majority of my revenues come from vendors. IBM is our biggest client. I make no bones about that. We make a lot of money from vendors. But the notion that I don't talk to end users is stupid, because I don't have any value to the big vendor if I'm not talking to practitioners. So RedMonk's focus is the practitioner. While a lot of industry analysts have considered that they need to focus on the CIO, because that's what all the vendors are concentrating on, we tend to concentrate on practitioners, developers, architects, DBAs, people that have to do stuff. So I think RedMonk's value is that we understand the needs of people that need to do stuff.
A lot of those people,
the kind of people that go, well, fuck, you know, I can't wait for the enterprise architect. I'm just going to, download Mule, and I'm going to start playing with ESB because I know that's what I need to do. Or they're going to be choosing a particular operating system, Linux distribution that they know is going to give them what they need, even if it doesn't necessarily map to a corporate standard. So I think RedMonk's value is just understanding the people that actually need to do stuff, why and how they're doing the things that they do. We find a way to, you know, get IBM and all those guys to pay us for that knowledge.
Right, okay. I mean, traditionally, people in certainly the open source community, if not guys with suits at the top end, would see the sort of thing you do and think, well, that's just a total bloody waste of time. You know, what the hell do we need people like that for? So how do you convince the sort of people who are our listeners... Why would they want to value what you do?
Well, there's a few things that makes what we do relevant to what they do. One of which is it's free. So decide for yourself.
Bonus.
If you don't like it, then fuck off. We publish our research on blogs. We don't have a proprietary for-pay library.
Nice.
Basically all our research is in public. Our peer readership is the internet. So if you don't like the ideas that we put forward, tell us why you don't like them, and it will be there in our research, because it's on the blog. We're not going to delete your comment because you don't agree with us.
Right.
So we think we do open source analysis. We publish, code content into the internet, and we allow people to peer read that. We think there's significant value to that. The fact is that if you look at our customer base, at least on the vendor side, and as I've said very clearly, vendors pay us money, a lot of those vendors, or a lot of our customers, are open source companies that are commercial open source companies. So if you're a big fan of Spring, the fact is we would want to do business with Interface 21. I'm not claiming they're a customer, I'd like them to be one. But certainly Eclipse, they pay us money, we help them try and build communities. Xenos, Covalent, Hyperic. We deal with a lot of companies that are major contributors to open source. We help them build their communities and so on. So in terms of your community, I would just say one of the reasons you might pay attention to us is that we're actually writing about the technologies you're interested in. MuleSource is a good example. So the guys at Mule pay us money, even though they're already, you know, doing some really interesting, sophisticated community-based marketing, they've decided that we've got something to offer them. One of the reasons they do that is we look like them. We're a small company. We charge people for services, but not for the core research, for the content, the code.
Yeah.
I actually think, when I say that we're open source analysis, I mean that. We do take money from large vendors. They're patrons. I mean, the fact is that if we look at a lot of the big open source projects, Linux, Apache, the kinds of things your customers or your listeners are interested in, the fact is that the big vendors put money in there as well. It just so happens that they also put money towards RedMonk, which enables us to analyze things and begin to do things that are not purely based on market share revenues, which the traditional analyst companies are. So, you know, we don't really sort of, let's see how to put this. I was going to say we don't care. That's not true. We want the open source communities to think well of us, and we found in our experience they do. And, you know, so a good example would be Debian. You will see that in terms of research and agitation, we're the only analyst firm out there that has ever said that big vendors, IBM and so forth, should support Debian. Why is that? Because of the big community, and there are a lot of people out there, and, you know, we see a lot of that. I think that there is substantive value to having someone on side fighting your corner. But, of course, you know, it's up to other people whether they think we are or not. If they think because we have a financial relationship with big companies that we can't play that role, and they've read our analysis and decided that it's crap, then, hey, you know, I can live with that.
So, just to wrap up the conversation, if you had some advice from your kind of slightly distant viewpoint of the open source community, what advice would you have to give to people at the grassroots like us of the open source community in terms of making ourselves more business friendly and without, well, to use a horrible, horrible phrase, selling out?
Yeah, well, it's difficult. I think the key thing is don't worry about it. We've all got to make a buck. I don't know about your readers. I keep saying readers, listeners, I should say.
We can transcribe it if you want, Muppet.
But if they have kids, you know, you have to feed people. You have to feed your kids. You have to put food on the table. It's not selling out. It's just making a few bucks. I think what's important, and certainly as Redmonk is concerned, is are we making a contribution? And if you're making a contribution, I don't think you need to worry about it. We're all free to monetize those contributions as we see fit. What really matters is, are you a member of the contribution society? I think Redmonk is. I think a lot of people in the grassroots that support Linux are. And all I would say is the grassroots is our constituency. I mean, you know, obviously it's marketing bollocks, but it took us 4 years to realize this. That, you know, there are many analyst companies that will help you as a vendor or an enterprise from the top down. We're the only ones that will help from the bottom up. And so if I, you know, your people, are they credible? Of course they're credible. I mean, the fact is they're the people that get things done in organizations. They're shadow IT. They're the kind of people that, you know, before I came to do this call tonight, I was talking to an extremely large financial services organization. And, yeah, they had just gone through an extensive evaluation of Enterprise Service Bus products. And all of the big vendors were basically crap. Meanwhile, Shadow IT, the part of the organization that needs to get things done, had downloaded and put into production MuleSource. They were using the Mule ESB, getting a lot of success out of it. I think, you know, if you're worried about, you know, a lot of pats on the back, then, yeah, probably you should only deal with proprietary technology. If you're worried about getting things done and making a contribution, yeah, it's about open source. And as I say, I think that's the grassroots. I think credibility is much less of a problem than it used to be.
Right.
Because I'm dealing with all sorts of different kinds of organizations, and let me tell you, they know that open source is credible.
The only
question is whether it fits in with the, you know, what purchasing and a particular enterprise architect's thought.
Right. Well, James, I feel as though, like, it's still a bit of a mystery to me, I suppose, exactly on the day-to-day level where maybe other analysts sort of organizations can fit in with the open source community. But I can see that you've kind of taken the ideals with Redmonk of what we as the open source community kind of tries to do with openness of information and community. And you seem to be doing some quite interesting things there. And I'd like to direct our listeners to your website to find out more. Could you give us the URL, please?
Yeah, if you just went to www.redmonk.com, you'll see something that, well, it's running on WordPress, open source code.
Hey.
You know, we played around with movable type for a while, didn't gave us what we needed. The community wasn't big enough. Obviously, the fact it was open source is what created that community. And yeah, you go there, it runs on WordPress. It's PHP at the back end, and as soon as you go to the front page, there are three blogs there. There are three analysts, Stephen O'Grady, Michael Cote, and myself. And as I say, we're very easy to engage with. So just go there. The front page is who we are.
Wikians.
We make it really easy. Our contact numbers are there on our blogs, nice. Our email addresses. So, feel free. Have at it. That's who we are.
Nice one. Thanks, James. It's been great talking to you.
Thanks so much.
Cheers, man. Thanks, Governor.
Catch up with you another time, hopefully.
Thank you very much.
No worries.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.
This week I have been mostly playing with Moin.
Moin?
What's Moin?
It's a Python based, or just
I hate
Python
it already.
Moin.
Moin.
Oh, the Python. Wiki, Moin.
Thank you.
Wiki, wow, Jim West.
Fred West.
Desperado. Did he kill a girl? Girl West.
What is Moin?
It's like German for hello or something.
Oh, okay.
Anyway, so I've been playing with.
I thought it was. Sorry.
Is this work related?
I thought it was Hawaiian.
No, that's Wiki.
Oh, that's the Wiki thing.
So, is this work-related, is it?
Yeah, entirely. We've been working on the launch of the public beta of Launchpad 1.0.
Launchpad? What's that, Matthew?
Well, it's an interesting collaboration software projects.
Talk about Moin.
So, for example, there's an interesting problem.
Yes.
Bugs aren't always found by the communities who originated the code.
Really?
And Launchpad lets you work together to collaborate in ad hoc teams.
Do you want me to put some incidental music in the background when you're talking?
Wow, and if it's canonical, that must be open source, right?
Launchpad's really cool. Elements of Launchpad are open source, and we have been contributing to the communities.
Tell us about Moin.
Right, Moin. So I've been spending a lot of time...
How easy to install, is it?
Don't give a shit. I don't have to install it.
Okay.
Let me talk. Right, so a lot of the work I do is collaborative editing of text.
Do you use Gobi?
No, I don't, interestingly enough, because I don't do much in the way of real-time
collaboratively
editing.
Editing text.
I don't do much in the work of real work. Anyway, carry on.
Right, so a lot of what I do is working on text arguments with other people.
Right.
And wikis are the way that we do that, canonical.
Okay.
And we use Moin. And one of the things that kind of I've noticed is that it's not always that efficient a way to work. For example, if you preview your hours and hours of work, and then you your browser crashes, or you accidentally click away and visit another page, or you upload an attachment to the wiki page, and then forget that you've actually not saved it, you've just previewed it, then you lose all your work. So what I do is I tend to write things in a text editor and paste it in.
Yeah.
But you shouldn't have to do
use MediaWiki.
Because that also saves, right?
No.
Exactly, so shut up.
It's just a generic problem with wikis.
Exactly. So
it's not a generic problem with all wikis. I mean, some people are looking at fixing this kind of thing.
And who's fixed it?
You've got to tell him to shut up.
DocuWiki.
You just tell me to shut up.
Sorry, carry on. You've got the problem that you can easily lose a lot of work. And okay, you're meant to save a lot. But the reason that you don't save a lot with a wiki is because people subscribe to the page, and they then get annoying emails. And so then they say to you, stop, not that anyone ever has done, but I imagine that someone's going to...
You can imagine it's tiresome,
stop bloody well saving that page, I'm subscribed to it. So, so you've got that. And also then, you have to wrestle...
Because that's kind of collaborative as well,
now,
isn't it?
Yeah, you could do, and I do use the Google spreadsheets from time to time.
Yeah.
But I sort of gave up on that when I was running on the 256 meg laptop, and it ran really slowly.
Yeah.
Now I've got more memory in my laptop, I've just not got back into the habit of using it.
Zimbra's doing that collaborative document
plus
stuff.
Plus, it'd be nice to use open source software where possible.
Okay, Zimbra's doing
that. And also, I'm working on basically the team that I work with use Moin. So that's what we use.
Python lovers.
Absolutely. Canonical is a Python shop, basically.
Yeah. I mean, I
did you see that letter that we had by the email? I mean,
Axe
conveniently forgot the emails this week, but there was an email in there saying why Linux doesn't perform as well as it used to.
Python.
It's basically blaming Python and all these other high-end languages.
Moin is fucking slow.
It is, and
it's largely because it's running Python.
We used it for userdocs.kosher.org, and I found it to be immensely annoying. I found it awkward to theme and awkward to set up and fiddly.
So
and,
you stuck with it, man.
And annoying all over the place. Yeah. But sorry, Matt, carry on. This is your segment.
No, no, I was going to say.
That's what you've been
playing with. I mean, it's not as interesting as AIDS, obviously. But,
no, no.
The thing is, you may hear later.
The thing is that I mean, I find that Moyn. The markup for Moyn is nicer than MediaWiki. There's like little things in there which
are nicer. Do you know how many icons?
Right? The markup for Moyn is nicer.
No icons.
It depends.
No, you can use icons.
It depends.
You can use it.
It depends on what they install.
With the toolbar. Right.
But MediaWiki is nicer to use, I think, than
Moyn. I actually quite like MediaWiki. I think it's
interesting that a business would choose something like that that's got so many limitations.
It's not, well, it depends. I mean,
I found it surprising that certainly the public canonical sites, help.ubuntu.com or whatever, when you go and search something and you find it on a wiki page about Ubuntu, they're Moyn Moyn wikis. And I thought, God, why the hell are you using Moyn Moyn? It's horrific.
I was surprised that they were using Moyn Moyn, but I'm assuming that that's a legacy, like probably at the time. That was the best decision because they're a Python shop, and I think Canonical have paid people to contribute stuff to Moyn.
Our Moyn instances are fairly well customized. Yeah. I think.
I mean, it's weird because the wiki, like, there's a Canonical wiki, there's an internal Canonical wiki for like business related stuff, and then there's obviously the public wiki, the Ubuntu wiki. And
so it's a secret wiki.
As a company, yeah, we have a Canonical wiki for like specific.
Open the wiki, man. Release the wiki.
Specific Canonical. For specific Canonical business.
Honestly, there's nothing interesting.
There's nothing interesting.
My phone number. Yeah. His phone number.
Nothing interesting. Amazing, AIDS wiki. Either. We didn't give him shit about it for 8 weeks, though, did we?
But the thing is, as a company, the wiki is pretty central and it's pretty useful. I mean, a lot of people use it to flesh out ideas and things like that and all the rest of it. So as a company that's like, one thing I like about Canonical, which surprised me, is how Canonical uses stuff like voice over IP and wikis and stuff like that, because we're a distributed company and it does work really well. I'm surprised other companies, like I've spoke to Ack about certain companies that he spoke to who aren't buying into the telecommunication.
Are you stealing Matt's segment here and talking about how great Canonical are?
No, just saying that wikis are useful for
companies. He's not doing that, but he's in disguise.
Canonical and other companies.
I've spent hours and hours and hours working in Moyn.
Losing work in Moyn.
Couple of weeks. Well, yeah, to an extent. And it just frustrates me that there isn't something better.
There is, MediaWiki.
There are many better things.
It depends whether your objection is with wikis or with the specific Moyn.
Here's what I want. I want OpenOffice to save to some wiki kind of back end.
I mean, that wouldn't be that difficult to implement as a plugin. To be honest with you,
I think it's pronounced bizarre.
Okay.
I mean, personally, when we've built, if we're building sites that are based on a wiki. The Lug Radio sites we've always done with MediaWiki. The Lug Radio Live 2007 sites, MediaWiki. If I'm building sites personally, I use DocuWiki, which is PHP.
Right.
Both of which I find to be a lot better than Moyn.
But it depends what you're wanting to do. I mean, for like the stuff that we, the wiki that we use for the thingy for planning Lug Radio Live, our private secret wiki, which hasn't been opened either.
What is that in?
That's like thing called PyWiki.
That's like five lines of
code,
isn't it?
It's like 30 lines of Python, because we don't need any...
Yeah, mainly us two, who just sort out stuff.
But it's just plain text. I mean, we don't need styling or appearance or...
That wasn't a dig at you two.
It was a little bit of a dig at those two.
Well, if they did any fucking work, it wouldn't have been a dig.
But, yeah, I mean, we don't need any formatting or styles or anything in our... It's just a place for notes.
Yeah.
It's the end of the show, but we've got no emails.
No, we fucking... Why haven't we got any emails?
All our eyes swivel towards Ack.
I was really busy today at work.
And shite.
And unfortunately, we still work on legacy paper technology when it comes to emails. I print them all out. Yeah.
So we defer it.
And John doesn't have a printer.
Gmail prints them out for us, doesn't it?
It does. Yeah. Gmail paper. Brilliant new scheme.
Did you get caught by any April 1st, by the way? Apart from my shoelaces and one.
I got caught by one.
For one tiny second, the At Media people, Pat Griffiths,
right.
They do the At Media conference in three different places. There's one in London, one in New York, one in Tokyo.
Right.
And they put up a thing, At Media Antarctica. And I looked at it, I thought, that'd be brilliant. No, hang on. And so for one tiny second, I thought, oh, come on, please let that be real. That'd be fantastic. Nah.
In other words, he believed it for a good 10 minutes.
No.
He had to read it 5 times before he understood it.
No, I read it and then I thought, no. It was basically the first email I read
right.
on the morning of April Fool's Day, so I hadn't thought about it. And I thought, this can't possibly be real. Oh, it's April Fool's Day. Damn.
I looked at the slash.home page and it got very, very tiring very quickly. Yeah.
Slash.com's always the hub of all this kind of stuff, isn't it?
Yeah, it's like... Anywhere where you see a tag OMG ponies, it has to be fucking destroyed.
OMG ponies?
Yeah, oh my god, ponies.
Fucking wait, I know what OMG was. What the hell are ponies got?
There seems to be
anything.
this little thing in the world of open sorcery.
Particularly Ubuntu.
Particularly Australian open sorcery. Let's leave it at that. Where people seem to love going on about ponies because they think it makes them ironically cute.
Did you get caught out, Jono?
I got caught out. I am ashamed to say, by the Google wireless thing.
Flush it down the toilet one.
Yes. For a split second.
Suck higher.
Because fucking Gingerman over
I did,
there.
I did.
Gingerlot Prime sent me the...
I did send you the thing.
And I was like, what? And I was like, oh.
No, hang on.
Excellent.
Sucker, were you bald man, sitting there quietly in the corner? No, I was completely unfooled by everything, even the Gmail paper.
No, I did get caught out, but I'm not going to go into it because it's a bit boring for you guys.
Oh, what was it? Something to do with your game?
Leo Laporte's Tech TV, and apparently G4 bought them. You have to know about
G4,
it.
Like the fat fucks.
You have to know the history of it all to understand it. So I'm not going to bore you with it.
The fucking Croydon Il Divo.
Yeah. Anyway. Community. Something I'm heavily involved with.
Hang on, Matt hasn't revealed whether he was caught by anything.
I wasn't on the date. I was when somebody else was saying, did you hear that April Fool? And then described one. And I went, what, really? Oh, right, yeah.
I thought it was going to be a dog-related April Fool.
No.
Bonio had been purchased by Heinz or something.
Lead singer with U2.
Bonio.
No, wouldn't it be good if they sponsored U2? That'd just be excellent.
We decided that because we've got no emails, because act shit.
I'll be honest with you. Just before we go on,
he'll be
we did say
we will go on.
We did
and on
and Ariston.
We did say send us some good emails, and you all came through and sent us a load of excellent emails.
Absolutely.
And then I forgot to print them out.
We've had some stunning emails.
We have had some astonishingly good emails.
Did you see the 400 porn movies?
Yes.
I was wetting myself reading through that.
Oh, I've got to resubscribe.
We have high comedy
Shame
emails.
Matthew, even I read them.
And some of them are very informative when they're not comedic.
Indeed.
And I'm very sorry that I didn't print them out, but we'll have a bumper email selection next week.
Very, very funny. So we decided we're going to talk about...
Excuse me one second. Stop spinning that fucking drumstick.
Yeah,
you
Matt,
dropped it in
it
every damn interview. Put it down.
We had some difficulty conducting interviews this show.
We have. All eyes now so we can get bacon.
What?
There was one point where you did something, nothing to do with what the interviewee was saying. You did something and you just ended up going completely... if you could be apoplectic with laughter, which you can't, then that's what you were
doing.
There
was a few amusing moments through one of the interviews. Ak and I had a bit of a comedy workshop going on. Matt actually physically fell asleep on the emails against us. We bought some new pop shields for the microphones, and they're very comfortable.
Oh, what do you mean, we, white man? I bought some new pop shields.
So you're black now, are you?
Sorry, you're going to pop a cap in my ass.
Thank you. I bought some new pop shields, and Matt bought some as well.
Your mine are at
white
home.
White men.
Yeah, so we decided because we're not going to do the emails, we're going to talk about our community.
Yes.
We love you.
And we feel a little bit like we've neglected our community a touch, because we've been very busy.
That's no excuse, Bacon. Even as I'm saying that, the irony was striking.
You're
looking
like the guiltiest man imaginable at this point. I've done nothing for like Radio Live whatsoever, Bradshaw.
Yeah,
take part in the thing, like we go into the IRC channels, you know, and we occasionally post in the forums.
While we're at work, do we? Yeah.
We'd like to. My fucking jobs community, not that community, but you know, another one. But we'd like to kind of sort the community out and make it
fucking oi, sort it out.
Sort it out, man.
That's romance,
that seems a little bit unreasonable. Sort it out.
No, what?
But
no,
there are a few cool things that have happened recently.
Very yeah. cool stuff. Like Mr. Ben.
Ben has had a child.
His wife popped one out.
Called yep. Mira, which is apparently a recursive acronym for Mira Moira. Is really cool or something.
Wasn't she that horrific serial killer?
Wasn't that an old car?
That was Myra.
Don't they make showers?
They do my make
shower,
showers.
I've got a
yeah.
Myra shower. Yeah. And the bloke who took over my job at Fassos used to work in second line technical support at Myra Showers.
I was going to say second hand cars for a second.
No. Did you ever second get line technical support
at Myra Showers.
Imagine
what questions line? Couldn't the first line technical support
I
be long
do third line? Always naked ladies in the shower.
You wake up and you go, I pulled the switch and no water came out. You know, at what point did the first line technical support go, oh, I can't handle that question and pass it back?
Sorry. You're going to have to stop talking because we seem to be in between misogynist and anonymous here with these two doing mimes. About naked women in the shower.
I didn't do anything.
Yes, you fucking did.
I think that's
right. So congratulations, Mr. Ben and his partner.
Yes, Mr. Ben and Mrs. Ben are now tiny Ben.
Mr. and Mrs. Ben and Ben. Why didn't
Mini Ben.
Why should it be Benjamina? His constant source of disappointment.
Benjamina. Benjamina.
What's his surname? Trot or something?
Thorpe.
Yeah.
Trot. Ben Trot is someone completely different. And his wife's called Mina. That's really confusing.
Me, no, I'm confused.
Yeah. That reminds me of
Ben
a story,
and Trot, the people who run Six Apart, who didn't move all type.
Oh, right, yeah.
And didn't Ben pad. Used to have eight arms?
That's Mr. Ben Octothorpe.
Yeah, so Thorpe.
Mr.
Yeah.
Ben with eight arms.
Or she.
Right, but yes, well done.
Yes.
Do we say well done? I mean, should he be applauded for this or just congratulated?
Mrs. Ben should really get well done.
To be honest with you.
She engaged in melon through the lemon hole action. I mean, it's not particularly
experience. Thank you for that, by the way.
But it is, isn't it? I mean, it's
Ben, much as we applaud you, you had to do not very much work nearly a year ago.
Yeah, your pain.
Mrs. Ben has
your pain is
thing.
The next 18 years.
Your pain really kicks in when she becomes a teenager. And that's when the worry
no,
happens.
No,
she starts bringing some horrible
you know what?
Bastards
you know
back
what?
Home.
You can imagine that being as they're in Scotland, Mr. Ben's going to have to put up with like buying crates of iron brew now and things like that. Och, McDan!
No, so it's not a baby. It's a
bear. Some iron brew.
Och, McDan.
Yeah.
Say that.
I think he's sitting there thinking, okay, you can move on now, gentlemen. Yes,
Matt,
well done, Ben. Well
Matt,
done, Mrs.
Ben. You do
realise
you turn me on when you hold your nose and slap your Adam's apple.
Your
like
your larynx. Mom. What else has happened that's cool?
Well, Bruno's old,
Bruno!
Lug Radio Facts.
Magnificent Bruno with the Lug Radio Facts.
Now that rocks.
Not the Lug Radio Facts is very funny.
Yeah.
That's a fact.
It is a fact.
Yeah, one of them so we like shit like that. Yorkshire Ripper.
And Lug Radio Live is going to be like, lots of people going to be showing up to Lug Radio Live in the community. But we want to...
Oh gosh, yes.
Planet.lugradio.org/facts, something like that.
Yeah. But we want to hear from ways in which we can
phenomenal.
we can do cool community stuff because we've got you know like I think the LAN gaming has now kicked off again.
Back yeah, on again. So yeah. Cool. Guys, email us, let us know when that's happening, we'll pimp it.
Lugradio.org/clan.
And of course, there's the #lugradio podcast
about clan.lugradio.org.
Nah, bollocks, I got that.
So we've got #lugradio podcast about a podcast in which Zalior and Aquarian and Nero
and other people who hate
us. Some kind of recursion going on there.
Gordon Pierce Jones, who was that?
Gordon Brown.
No Gordon Pierce Jones.
JCPGB pretty good privacy Jones.
JCB pretty good privacy.
Hang on.
Gordon Pierce.
My knob.
Have you not given up speaking English or what? What the hell are you talking about?
They had a guest presenter who was a bit Scottish.
Oh, right. Okay, right.
Scottish.
JCB PGP.
Wasn't Gordon Pierce Jones that shitty comedian bloke?
No, that was
John Sinclair.
John Gordon Sinclair.
No.
Gordon
You're
Strachan.
Gordon Strachan Sinclair.
The other
is that Michaela Strachan's brother?
It's like an orange, hairy Sinclair spectrum.
Anyway, what we want you to do is send us
Billy
Pierce,
that's it. I saw him in the drink section.
Billy Cena, Billy Pierce.
Send us ideas of good
Have
stuff.
Have you seen
no.
it?
No.
I saw him
then
in the drink
conversation
section.
On their own.
Yeah.
At Morrison's Leeds Merrion.
What the hell are you talking about?
Thanks for that,
Billy Pierce.
Anyway, as Ax says, send us some ideas.
Billy the Fish. Anyway, what the fuck are we talking about?
Well, if you've been paying attention, Mr. Bacon.
So, the community. Yeah, we want to have interesting things happen in the community. More stuff going on. So we're talking about...
We want to see more pregnancies. Get to it.
We want to hire teenage
Inside wedlock, obviously.
Like, we're talking about...
Radio makes no lifestyle choices.
we to condoms, essential wear. Have you seen those adverts?
No.
Very. Yeah, there's like, there's word, a whole brother. condom essential wear advertising campaign.
What exactly does easy on mean?
I don't know.
They're not particularly difficult to get
exactly,
on.
Exactly, yeah.
Large chunks of our audience saying, what the fuck are you talking about? yeah.
Not so much. Chunks.
You know those, fascinating fact. You know those.
Here we go. It's going to be awful, isn't
you
it?
You know, I've got a grim condom story coming up now, aren't they?
Everyone ducks.
No.
You know when you lose one.
You know those, do you remember in cereal packets you used to get those little rubber
spokey
things that you'd turn inside out and then pop up?
And then
they'd
spring up, yeah.
When I was a kid, I used to think that a condom was one of those that basically sat on the end of your dick.
Thanks.
Thanks for that.
I was so very wrong when I discovered condoms.
Right.
14 children later.
That was bad as Sparks' friend who used a Mars bar wrapper for a contraceptive.
Do we believe that?
I don't think so. I think he's got a kid.
And, he was shagging Marianne Faithful.
My parents.
At least he got to eat a chocolate bar afterwards.
My parents told me on my 18th birthday that I was conceived on the floor in my Nana and Grandad's house on New Year's Eve, which is why I'm born in September.
Ah. Nice.
So the community. So the community anyway, yeah.
I think that what we should do is maybe have a competition.
You're getting slower, Matt. You're starting to... Because Matt's going to seize up in a second. We're going to have to oil his knee.
Stuart.
We have some loot. I have some loot.
Do you?
That could be given away in a competition.
It's ages since we've done a competition.
What about... away loot.
Your loot? You haven't got any loot.
I have got loot.
What, Mills and Reed had a new place, baby?
No. Loot that was sent to us for the LUG Christmas party, but it arrived on the 20th of January.
Oh, is this from? Is this the 1.2 tons of Nivelle loot?
No!
They've got a warehouse somewhere.
I managed to give out the 1.2 tonnes of Nivelle loot by the simple experience of having Dave Goodwin from Wolves Lug go home with 39 Nivelle t-shirts.
I've seen tramps in Wolverhampton walking around with a Sousa cap on.
Dave Goodwin from Bromsgrove Lug.
Oh yeah, there you go. Dave, we love you. Thank you for taking all the
loot. Bromsgrove Lug. That sounds like a fucking fun and games lug to go to.
Look, in the past, right, we've done Look Queer for the New Year. We've done... What was the other one?
No, we didn't do the other one before you even suggest it. Huh? There was one related to that we were talking about.
Which we were not going to do.
Oh, no. I genuinely don't remember that.
The first one we did was Stupid Hat for Corporate
Chat. That's it. So I think we should do another one like Come Quick, It'll Make You Sick or something like that.
No.
Come on, let's do another one.
What did you just say?
Come Quick, It'll Make You Sick.
No. It has to not be Stupid Hat for Corporate Chat. You just had to wear a hat.
People are going to have to buy like those cameras that take 500 photos a second.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't have to be anything horrible.
Yeah, well, think of so.
Have
send
a poo with tiramisu.
No,
stop it. Sending your suggestions for things that we can talk about, the competitions we can have on the show, and community stuff that we can do. Like we were talking about having a Q&A session on IRC for the presenters to show up to.
The highest open source operating system. We want photos of you with your laptop at the top of the Empire State Building.
One,
that's a cool idea. Stuff like that.
Yeah,
there you go.
Have a date with a China plate.
Wow, AIDS contributed to the community.
Yes.
Fuck you.
Hey, so,
frame it.
highest open source operating system.
Things like that. But
let us know.
We want
photographic evidence.
Because we have got a very...
And an altimeter.
Definitely.
We've got a very cool community with Lug Radio, and we want to keep that ticking along.
So we wanted
to put the idea out there. People send in your ideas and shit.
Yeah, okay, so send us your ideas for new things. Send us your shots of the highest open source operating system. Some numpty's going to send us a picture of Windows Vista on the space shuttle now, aren't they?
Incidentally,
it's open source, is it?
Where the fuck has the wiki gone?
Wiki.
Yeah, we need to reclaim the wiki.
Wiki.lugradio.org doesn't seem to be there anymore.
Why?
You two are the fucking webmasters. Didn't we push over
all this to the ninja?
The ninjas are handling it, but I don't know whether they've been too busy or what. But maybe we should just put it on Angel again.
I didn't realise that when the ninjas said they were going to take over stuff, stuff was going to go away to never come back again.
Ah.
We should talk to the ninjas. I'm sure
restore from backup.
I'm sure there's a perfectly legitimate reason because the ninjas are very cool guys and they've done a great job.
Maybe we should ask a ninja.
We should also thank
our extensive mirror network.
We should.
Which includes our friends at Skynet now.
It does.
And the people at Efficient PC.
Yes. Actually.
Oh, really?
Yeah. That's efficientpc.com. I should imagine.
Well, I said to the bloke, when he said, we're going to do a mirror, lug Reddit or efficientpc.com, although they set up.
Yeah.
And I said, he said, can I have a name for the mirror? And I said, okay, you could have a name. No problem. And if you want, you can make it a little bit of an advert, but don't take the piss. And he was like, no, don't worry about it. None of that. Not interested in that. We just want to help Lug Radio.
Good man.
So I think he gets a free advert for that. Well done. Thank you very much, Efficient PC. Who sell PCs. Linux on PCs.
Yeah, efficient. Get in there.
And we also love our regular community of people who post on the forums and take part in the discussion on the IRC channel and stuff like that, because it keeps things...
You know, I need to get into the IRC channel more often.
You do.
Well, we all do. Which wouldn't be too difficult, because the last time I was in there was Guadec 2006.
Oh, wow, yeah. And now that I don't work for one of their rivals, I'd like to really send a warm, heartfelt thanks to Bite Mark for hosting our stuff and the Line 3 posting the forums.
And Bite Mark, of course, giving us a load of money for Lug Radio Live.
Bite Mark, basically,
we love Bite Mark. Matt Block is the coolest and thinnest man who's ever lived. And
he's,
well done.
He's very, very
cool.
We love Bite Mark. Go and buy Bite Mark hosting right now.
It's dead flaky.
You see,
not dead flaky.
It's fucking excellent.
It is excellent.
I'd buy it, but I can't be asked to run a VM.
Right.
Ah, you don't have to run a VM.
We're not running a VM.
Oz is a proper, actual, machine plugged into a
blue light in it and everything.
I can't be asked to run anything.
Matt's still probably got fast host hosting.
Has he really got a blue light
somewhere?
Seen the box?
No,
not the
box. My Myth TV's got a blue light on it. I'm guessing it looks
it's
about the same as that.
It's fucking 12U and it's got one fucking CPU.
Matt Block has to go in there every so often to wind the fucker back up again.
I was going to say, last week, I think the elastic band broke and all sites went away.
Hang
so Jono moved his gallery to Flickr.
We are trying to give them a pimping.
Sorry,
we're
that was all a big lie.
It's taken the load really well. I mean, I was a bit worried with Big Red Recording that was going to, because it's media.
No, I never thought that would generate any traffic.
To be honest with you, I mean, once your dad had downloaded it, that was it, really, and you send him a CD anyway.
Usually, like, there's been times in the past where I've posted something on my blog, and of course it goes on Planet
Gnome. Because you're so famous.
No, because everyone reads Planet Gnome, and I put an image on there, and it takes it down.
And it hammers the crap out of the server.
Really?
And I was a bit worried that, like, linking MP3s on my blog and then it going on Planet Gnome and Planet Ubuntu was going to get hammered, but didn't even quiver.
That's because nobody likes your metal.
But that's because everybody looking at it doesn't start downloading the MP3.
Oh, definitely.
In fact, nobody looking at it. we ought to congratulate Mr. Bacon, really, for doing some good work for charity. And we ought to congratulate all of his donators for giving some money to charity.
Donors,
thank you.
Well done, Mr. Bacon, for the Big Red Recording. £1,000?
Well done.
£1,200?
How
about that?
£1,360.
Nice one. I'm hoping to Comic Relief.
You're hoping to give at least 300 of that to charity.
I want to. Yeah, we'll give you the rest.
What are you going to spend it on?
Well, I've just bought a PlayStation 3. Haven't I?
He's going to want like to lose £5 a month to the EFF.
I'd like to put out a request at this point, actually.
That's a very good point.
And before you fucking go ahead with that, I'd like to put out a request. One thing I'd like to do with the Big Red Recording is to make CDs. Mm-hmm. And I need some money from a company who want to donate some money to get some CDs pressed, which can then be sold, and all the proceeds will be given to charity.
Why don't you take it out of what you've just won?
No, because that's all
that's donated directly
that goes
to
Comic Relief.
Oh, right, okay. They don't send in the money, can't even never bloody see it then.
So the thing is that what I'd like to see is
You'd like to see lots of your CDs everywhere.
I'd like to see a company give us, let's say, for example, £1,000 and get...
I'd like to see a company give me
Shut the fuck up! I'd like to see a company give us, let's say, £1,000 or £2,000, get 500 CDs produced, or however many CDs, let's say 250 CDs, and sell them. So let's say they cost £1 to make a CD. I'd like to see them sold for a fiver, like with liner notes and everything on there, so people can buy a CD, and then that'll make a good amount of money for Comet Relief as well. So if anybody's got some money they want to donate it, then basically I want to give a pressing company the music and the liner notes and the artwork. They produce a bunch of shrink wrap CDs, which can then be sold for, you know, like I say, a fiver or whatever, and then that's going
to
raise.
Well, they could just donate the fiver to charity. They don't have to listen to your music then.
Sure, but
I've discovered that people generally like to buy stuff.
Right. That's why how charity works. You know, you need at least a fucking sticker.
There are two very important additional points.
Just the two. Either.
The first one is in exactly the same way as you'd like to see that. I'd like to see it rain gold coins out of the fucking sky. And secondly, have you started paying your fiver a month to fucking ORG yet?
No.
Which you promised you would do 2 weeks ago.
I didn't.
Yes, you did. Yes, we have audio recording of it. You can't deny. it. You promised it.
Okay.
You haven't done it.
I'll give some money to ORG.
Well done. £5
you
a month.
You make her cry.
Yeah, because
plus the 2 years of backlog.
Because, you know, now my circumstances have changed. You know, I fucking...
I have lots of spare money, yeah?
Yeah, I have lots of spare money. No,
it's
they
just
don't.
Like, just like me, I've got loads of money to give to people. Oh, no, that's right, I've got a kid.
Yeah, I've got a kid as well. I've got two hairy kids. And I'm not referring to my testicles. So, should we wrap it up?
Yeah,
not my testicles, or my kids.
Well, it's been a pleasure.
No, it hasn't.
Thank you, listeners.
It's been a torture, to be honest.
Thank you, listeners, and goodbye.
Oh, by the way, in case you didn't get it, we did the 18 theme tune, alright?
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.